Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, this is Richard Herring speaking on the internet. I hope you enjoy my show, Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. It should be quite good. It is free. If you want to help contribute towards the costs of making this and then making other fantastic internet shows, just go to gofasterstrike.com/RHLSTP5 and you can download a video version of this show for just £15 for the whole series. There'll probably be 12 interviews in that. That's pretty good value. Or you can just buy a one-off show for a bit less. Or you can get the audio that you're about to listen to, but pay for it. That's your choice. There's also an option to buy badges and contribute either one-off or monthly. But enough about that. Enough of my yakking. Let's get on with Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I wonder who will be the guest this week. Let's find out. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man whose penis is currently travelling in time and is inside Joan of Arc. Man, she's hot. Please welcome Richard Herring. Hello. How you doing? Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rehelestapur. Oh, you're much better than last week's audience. Come on, come on. They're just going to get to a point where the whole show is just the same every week, and I just do the same jokes every week. It's great to be back. We've got a fantastic guest coming up. I've got another Dragon's Den idea. I've been thinking of lots of Dragon's Den ideas. This is quite a niche one, but this is quite a good recipe for you before we get to the Dragon's Den bit. I like asparagus. I really genuinely like eating it. I know what it does to your wee and my wife's wee, but I like it. And I found that the best way to cook it is to griddle it, because then that's, you know, it's not, it remains nice and firm. And if you put a bit of dark soy sauce on it, that's really, and then it kind of coagulates around the asparagus. It's genuinely, this is a brilliant tip. You'll be glad. Don't laugh. It's not a joke. It's turned into a cookery show. You try that. But what's good, if you put quite a lot of soy sauce on, the soy sauce kind of cooks on the griddle, and quite a lot of it kind of sticks and becomes, ruins your griddle, essentially. I know this is quite middle class, right, having a griddle. You know what a griddle is, right? But then if you get it just right, the soy sauce turns into this very chewy, toffee-like thing, and you can eat, you know what I'm talking about, you can eat that. I'm going to make that as a business, just cooked soy sauce as a fast food. You throw away the asparagus, or you can sell that as an alternate business, but then it's just it's a chewy bit of soy, dark soy sauce that has been cooked. It's the best thing I've ever tasted You'd have to cook quite a lot of it to be make it feasible to sell. But that's going to the Dragon's Den. 10% for £20,000. You in? Yeah, that man's in. Let's just show that he is definitely in. There he is. Just make sure I've got him. We're getting better at this. Is that your? Are you together? No. Oh, he's good. No, I think you look good as a couple. I think the camera's just focused in on you. You two together as friends, and this guy's just sort of sat next to you. For one of my fans, seriously, he's quite good looking. He looks like a young Jesus. Yeah, that's good. It's just a good, you don't want to be like the 33-year-old Jesus. He'd gone off by then. He looks sort of like the 25-year-old Jesus. Before he'd got, famous and stuff, we don't really know what he did between the ages of, about 3 and 30 and 30. That's when he started getting to prominence again. He was like a little shy. He was like a good-looking guy. He was going around to make the most of being the Son of God. Good luck, Jesus. What's your name, Jesus?
Matt.
Matthew. So it could be. Yeah. Not that good, is it? What do you do for a living? You make adverts. Yeah. Boo. What do you make adverts? Yeah, thank you. Abu. What do you make adverts for? Why are you here on your own when you're so good looking? What happened? Your mate left. Was he upset? Not enjoying it. What did he get upset about?
Had to go and make an advert.
Has he? Have you come here to steal ideas? And you saw the Queen Elizabeth rough masturbation thing. Well, we'll make an advert of that bloke wiping his cock on Elizabeth I rough. Is that what you were?
KFC.
Yeah, it's for the KFC. What were you advertised in the past? KFC. Have you done those awful KFC adverts that have recently been on? Is that you?
Not those ones.
No, okay. They're the good ones from the past. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Don't nick my ideas. I've got you. I quite like you've got a T-shirt that says heroin addict. That's almost like a pun on me, as well as being heroin. It is a pun. And there's some very smart men here next to the nuclear physicist. He's a nuclear physicist. He could blow you up at any second. I know some. Oh, they are. They're the butlers are here. I thought, yeah. And this man looks very smart. And again, quite, what's going on? Why's all these cool? I mean, yeah, not so much you. You're all right. I mean, for a Richard Herring audience member, very, very attractive. But you've chosen to sit next to a bloke who looks like a supermodel from a band. Are you in a band?
I was.
You were in a band. What band were you in?
The Light Wings.
The Light Wings. That's not a real band. It's no good. It's no good. I wouldn't know anyway, to be honest. I met Chris Martin when he was quite famous from Coldplay. That's a band people have heard of. And I didn't know who he was. And then I met him about a year later and I said, you know what, Chris, I saw your band's album for sale in Australia. And I he went, yeah. I go, oh, what went wrong with the Light Wings? It was all right. And what are you doing now? You should be getting another band because you still look, not rattled. You still look. You're not like Stuart Lee's anus. You are. What are you up to now?
Working.
Yeah. What job do you do?
I work for Thames Water.
Thames Water. They provide my water. I think I better be nice to you now because I think there might be something just arriving in my water. It's nice. Thanks for coming along, and it's nice to have a pop star in the audience. It's good. He's good. He's a nice. Were you in the Light Wings as well? No. Are you with you his brother?
Yeah.
Your slightly uglier brother. It's bad luck. He's still good looking though. But look. That's what a normal Richard Herring fan looks like. And then look at that, you're like an Adonis, but look at you next to him and it ruins everything. You've got a lovely girlfriend / wife?
Fiance.
Fiance, oh, that's nice. What's your name?
Alice.
Yeah. What do you do, Alice?
I'm an occupational therapist.
I used to share a flat with loads of occupational therapists. It was brilliant. they were great. When I was at university, no one would live with me in the second year, so I had to go and live up on the hill with loads of occupational therapists. But they were lovely. Did you have fun when you were a student as an occupational therapist? Yeah, I bet you did. But thank you for all your hard work. I'm welcome. You haven't done anything for me yet. Look, we'll crack straight on, because our next guest's trying to book a cab to leave. So he genuinely is, but I don't think he wants to go. I think he's just, you know, he lives in our town. He is probably best known as the Tory candidate from Birds of a Feather. That is what we've all come to see him for tonight. Will you please welcome Robert Llewellyn, ladies and gentlemen, from off of Birds of a Feather. Welcome. Thank you. Take the mic out and speak into it, and put it nearer your face.
There we go.
You
like
can
that.
Speak into it. Yes. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Very kind. Welcome.
Do you remember much of the Birds of a Feather episode you did?
I remember getting a lift to the studio with one of the birds.
Which bird was it? Was it Dorian one? Or was
no.
it? It was one of the other
one
birds.
One of the other ones.
Sharon or Tracy?
Tracy.
Okay. Yeah.
It was great, and they were lovely. They were very sweet, nice. And I was playing a Tory candidate.
Were you hoping you might get back in the
whole
remake?
A day's work.
Was it?
Yeah.
they brought it back, so you could
they could bring
your character back again.
I hope not.
What were they like in real life, the birds?
They were weirdly, freakishly like the characters they play. Obviously, it was written for them, and they've known each other all their lives and all that stuff. I'm sure it's well known. I didn't know at the time, but I learned. So they're very similar. And I think there were quite a lot of similarities between their own lives and their husbands.
Oh, really?
As in they were inside.
Right.
I don't know. That could be scurrilous.
Could have started off on a bad note there.
Could have done,
take this podcast down with your lies. It's good, but it's no good night, sweetheart, is it? Let's face it. You can only come up with one idea like that, Marks and Gran, and then you're treading water with your Birds of a Feather.
Sorry, I laughed slightly too richly at that particular comment.
So I do like to go to the Britcom Confessions website, which you may not know about.
I don't know about that.
Website where people give their sexual fantasies about British comedians. And,
right. I see. So it's not British comedians. It's not their sexual fantasies. It's sexual fantasies that people have about British comedians.
We can set up another website for you.
Can I have... Sorry, okay, now I understand.
Robert Llewellyn would... He'd like to... Yeah, whatever. So there is only one about you, and it's only elliptically about you, I'm afraid. But that is still better than Ollie Mann, who got no people want to have sex with him. Not even a pervert want to have sex with him, as has been proven. This is what it says. I'd love to have a threesome with Rimmer and Lister.
Right.
No, a foursome with them and the cat...
Right.
Scrap that and just make it a full-on Red Dwarf orgy. So you come in...
So, not even mentioned. not even a character mention.
But you are in there.
Fine.
You're in the melee.
That's as close as I've got.
Would you like that if that was... If
35
that was put...
years in the business, and that's all I can do.
If that was put to you in that way. Yeah, we'll take those two. Oh, no, and him. Oh, and the rest.
Yeah,
and the rest.
Yeah.
And the cameramen and the crew. Come on, I'll come on in. It does lead me to the question I did want to ask about Red Dwarf. Has Crichton ever tried to suck his own cock? Have you ever dressed up as Crichton, and tried to suck Crichton's cock?
There's two things. Crichton could very easily, because his head comes off.
That's
so he could just take his head off and just hold it there.
Yeah.
So he could really, he could abuse himself quite badly.
Does he have any kind of genitalia? Has that been established?
No, there's nothing down there except plastic underpants and a trademark. A classic line. No, wait a minute. What was the question? It's quite difficult.
Have you ever dressed up as Crichton and tried to suck your own cock?
No.
And have you, just as yourself...
Oh, yeah, I've definitely tried to, yeah. And failed. And even went and did yoga when I was about 19 to think, if you really got flexible.
Yeah.
You know, but I never managed, no.
Were you the only man in a group of yoga? And everyone's going, what's that guy doing here? Why is he so interested in getting flexible in that particular direction?
I never managed. But the other thing that is important, which is a theory I came up with years ago, with full head prosthetics.
Yeah.
is it, to use it as a form of punishment, particularly for sexual offenders, because I've never been less interested in any form of sexual activity or looking at anything or anything to do with sex as when you've got a rubber head on.
Right.
It just does something. And so I thought, well, you could let people out into the community if you gave them a really fucking weird-looking rubber head. It would, for a start, everyone would know.
Exactly.
They would and they would have zero libido. It would just completely go. It's incredible.
And when you took off the head, was it suddenly like, one?
Yeah, massive, massive reaction. Yeah.
It is an odd thing. I'm going to get onto it later, but we'll talk about it now. I mean, it's sort of an odd thing to be in a such a successful show, and presumably you were able to walk down the street and absolutely nobody know you
were. Oh, no, absolutely, yeah, for 10 years. So I did it, started in, late 89, properly, yeah. And then until, say, 98, when we finished Series 8, I think it was. And in that 10-year period, I think once or twice someone said, "Are you that bloke?"
Right.
You know, which was, and then, but if I walked down the street with any of the rest of the cast, I couldn't believe what happened with them. I mean, particularly with Craig, because he would say, "Hey, do you know who I am? Hello, I'm Kate Charles." I wonder if he'd listen to this. Hope not. But you know, that was a real shock to see the reaction they got. But this is at the kind of height of dwarf mania. And it never happened to me. One waiter in Morton in the Marsh, in a lovely restaurant in
Morton
in the Marsh.
It's bad when you can remember. If you can name him, this is even worse.
who didn't serve me. He wasn't serving me. He was serving other people at the other end of the restaurant. And he came up and he said, "Oh, can I have your autograph?" You know? And I went, "God, I don't know who you..." I'd never seen him before. And I said, "Oh, how did you know?" He said, I recognised you from the way you eat." And I just didn't, because he'd definitely not been. I was had my back to him, so he'd been seeing someone eating, I guess, like that. And I was with my missus, who has never got over that. It just makes her depressed. If I can't talk about that story with her, because she just thinks it's too depressing.
That's very good.
And particularly as Crichton doesn't eat.
No, so you're just moving like Crichton has. You had to extrapolate. And go, that is how he. If he did eat, he would eat
if
like
he did
that.
Eat, that is
from
how
behind.
He from behind. if he had a human head. Anyway.
Well, we may get to Red Dwarf, but you've been asked everything about Red Dwarf. Yeah, I'm sure. There's nothing I can ask you that will.
We are making. We're making more. I can tell you that. Yeah, this year we're doing more.
And that's on Dave.
On Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah, Red Dwarf on Dave.
Cool. Well, we might come back to it, but we
don't have to.
We might not. And there's much more. There's more interesting things to be said. I've been watching you. I found a clip of the maybe one of the first things you did. I mean, you're so ridiculously young. I mean, it's kind of.
What you mean? I was.
Well, you were in this clip.
Young.
Yeah,
yes,
no, you're not, certainly not now, Robert.
No.
In the Joeys. You were in a group called the Joeys. I want to establish, why did you call yourself the Joeys, first of all? Because that has an unpleasant... for my generation, maybe not for your generation. And it's such a politically correct kind of right-on comedy troupe. But it can't be anything to do... When we were at school, there was in Blue Peter, they helped some guys with cerebral palsy, and one of them was called Joey Deacon. And Joey became like the generations.
Right. God, you see, that shows that shows the our age difference.
Yeah.
So I'm
glad that it's not, because I would have just kicked you off the show. I'd have had, because now I work for Scope, although I did my fair share of saying Joey in the proper
voice. So you would say to someone
in the 1970s.
You would say to someone, "You're a bit of a Joey," meaning you're.
Yeah, you wouldn't just say it like that, though.
All right.
You would say it in a very unpleasant way. So I'm glad that's... Why did you call yourself the Joeys?
It was a guy called Bernie Evans, who was one of the group, came up with the name because he thought it sounded like a clown.
Right.
And it was short and it was easy to remember.
Yeah.
He had a very good list of arguments. It's also a slang term from the 1950s from Liverpool. He was from Liverpool.
Yeah.
Or he's from that area. For a used condom that you see floating in the canal.
Right.
Hey, look at that. There's a Joey.
It's a budgie.
Yeah.
And a baby kangaroo.
Baby kangaroo.
And it had nothing to do with anything.
No, because it sounds like the Joeys are going to come on and... I mean, there's an element of clowning in the bits I saw. There was only, I think, probably that one clip of you
very little,
from Newsnight or something.
And
it's quite kind of po-faced, political...
It was hard-hitting political... comedy.
Yeah.
People did laugh. Yes. They did laugh occasionally. Or quite a lot. I
mean, but it's, yeah. it's very much of its time. It's about, it's men being about, you know, and the macho, you know, taking the piss out of macho guys and soldiers. I mean, and you've got a very rubber face as a young man, ironically enough.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know what my face was doing. It wasn't
it's very expressive.
Controlled.
But also, you've got a hell of a lot of hair.
Huge amount of very quite off-putting. Dark, thick hair. Yeah. Yeah,
and
hard to believe now.
It's worth having a look at the Joeys. What happened to the other Joeys?
They all very sadly one passed away. Who was in that? Who's in that clip? He passed away quite a long time ago. One is a kind of management consultant, really? Extraordinarily successful, and the other musician Nigel is teaches. He lives in Brighton and he teaches industrial design.
Right. So was this at the heyday of alternative comedy? Was it sort of the 80s?
Yeah. So late 70s, early 80s. So yeah. I met them. We met in the late 70s, and we did a few sort of weird cabarets. They were called.
Yes.
It's embarrassing now to say that. Then it was incredibly trendy doing a cabaret. I don't know what the hell we were doing, and I didn't want to be on stage. I wanted to write for it, right. and not be in it because I was too scared. I'd never done anything like that before, and it was this one night in a pub in Dalston in London that we did this thing, and I did some of the bits, and people laughed. And I think if they hadn't laughed, I'd never have done it again. I was really mortified. I didn't enjoy it. I mean, it wasn't anything I'd ever wanted to do.
Yeah.
But you then get that bug, you know, and you went, oh God, I said something, and everybody laughed. Oh, it's weird. You know, I don't know. Anyway, so that was about early 1980.
Yeah, yeah.
Which now is like a proper long time ago, isn't it? Because I used to lie to people because I wanted to be a real sort of experienced thespian when I'd done 9 shows. So yeah. I said, I've been doing it for years. Well, I've been doing it for like 11 weeks. And then now I want to lie the other way.
Yes.
I've only just started.
And were you working with all of the kind of alternative comedians around there?
I mean, our first really successful warm-up guy that we did lots and lots of gigs with, in just around the corner in Covent Garden, was Ben Elton.
Right.
And he was still a student. So he was brilliant. I mean, you could tell that guy just churned out. Because we'd do the same show every week, and he'd come with half an hour of completely new material.
Yes.
Every fucking week. It was just shocking how much he produced. You know.
Yeah.
So, yes, that crowd, Nigel Planer is a very old mate of mine. I met him around that time. So that sort of, I guess that first generation of whatever they were, I don't know. We didn't wear ruffle-fronted shirts and tell sexist jokes. That's about it, really. Everything else was sexism and racism was like, no, that wasn't right.
No.
In the 1980s.
Well, because I was sort of getting into the stand-up circuit at the end of the 80s, and there was still a lot of... It was a similar sort of thing of a very, you know, a right-on attitude behind what you were doing that nowadays seems... It seems a little bit dated, the joke stuff, just because... But it needed, but it needed to be like that at the time things were so bad.
It's hard to imagine how virulent the sort of Jim Davidson... So now we can sort of see Jim Davidson. Even he's toned it down about 1,000%. But if you imagine a brutally sexist, violent, horrible, racist thug. That's a comedian, and that's what comedy was about, you know. And it was fucking horrible. It wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't.
Even the stuff that got on TV. I mean,
that was on telly.
The comedians was, you know, which I loved as a kid because it was people telling jokes, and I didn't necessarily get what was going on. But it was very, you know, sexist. Yeah. And even the mother and little jokes were the least of it. So it's kind of an amazing. And that 80s stuff is an amazing time, I think.
Yeah,
but it's. Yeah, I don't know, I think even the young ones, were you in the young ones?
No, you didn't
get there. But that, I so love that at the
it's
time.
It's stunning.
I find it difficult to watch now.
Yeah, it is weird how it's dated. Yeah. I was in Bottom. Yeah, Bottom, that's right, Bottom was extraordinary, because it was just I was ashamed, because by the time I was watching Bottom, I was old enough to think that sort of puerile humour was really not necessary. And I would literally there would be a wet patch in my trousers because I was laughing so much. I mean, just pulling out a nasal hair with a pair of pliers in a bathroom. Two grown men. I mean, it's fucking ridiculous, but just it did make me laugh.
Fantastic. And I was quite interested to see that, because I owe a lot of my... laughably called career to Paul Jackson, who was the Young Ones producer, but he discovered you for the Red Dwarf
part. For Red Dwarf, yeah.
And you were doing a show about being a robot in Mammon, Robot Born of Woman.
That's it.
Yeah. What was that show like?
God, that was fantastic. Cutting edge. That was a cutting edge show. It was a Perrier nominee.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, I didn't win. Jeremy Hardy won.
Oh, was that you?
Yeah, but it was really good fun to do. It was a play about a robot. Really.
Yeah,
I'd been in America the year before, and I'd seen I went to the premiere, only time I've ever done it in my life, the premiere of RoboCop,
right,
in Hollywood, in Man's Chinese Theatre, with all the actors and like proper famous people and red carpet
and the hands. And I haven't got Hermione's, hand there.
Didn't test any hands. I must admit, I should have done. And RoboCop was, you know, RoboCop is what it is.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I'd love to do I wanted to do a movie about a robot that was nice, which is so spooky now. You know, didn't go around killing people.
Yes.
Or shooting things or whatever. It didn't have guns, but just sort of tied it up. And,
yeah.
And I mean, how, now looking back, I mean, this is 2 years before I met Robin Dugg, who wrote Red Dwarf. Kind of spooky. You know, basically a robot that does laundry.
Yeah, and so you'd sort of auditioned for the part without knowing...
Without even knowing there was a part. Yeah, there wasn't a part then, but I mean, that was...
So did they write it based on you, or did they have
the idea? No, not at all. It had been... there'd been an episode, which is the one episode of Red Dwarf I'd never seen, which had Crichton in it.
Right.
Played by an actor called David Ross. So it's quite a different performance, and he's... Lovely guy. He's been in Red Dwarf since. He was the voice of Talkie Toaster, for anyone who might be interested. So it was, no. I think it took like the first series. They then saw, they kind of changed it and it sort of wrote it for me more then. But initially, no, it was their thing altogether. Yeah.
Interesting. I'll go over to an emergency question.
Oh, yeah.
I'll ask, I'm going to go old school. Would you prefer to have... can't remember what the question is now, it's so old school. Would you prefer to have a hand made out of ham or an armpit that dispensed sun cream? Which of those would you prefer? And you can ask any questions you like about that,
right,
if you don't.
I know
you're aware of this question.
I'm aware, I've heard this question before, after diligently listening to the reservoir. It made me anxious. I had an anxiety attack when I was walking the dog the other day.
Really?
About the junction between the human, you know, flesh and the circulatory system nerves and the ham.
Yeah.
And I sort of had this, oh, God, you imagine, like, if you had a really deep cut on your body somewhere and you pushed cooked ham into it. I just went, oh, that's got to be fucking horrible, isn't it? Because I like that. I thought when I first heard it, I thought, oh, I'd choose the ham hand.
Yeah.
Just like, I don't mind a bit of ham.
No,
I'd probably
nice.
Put a bit of gherkin with it or something.
You can do that.
But then I got worried about the junction.
Yeah. Now that is an interesting, because nobody has been worried about the junction.
No one ever mentioned it.
I think that's because you're used to having bits of body parts put on top of you.
I've had
so you're
lots
thinking,
of stuff.
How would this hand fit?
How would it join on?
And what happens with the joints? That is kind of terrifying, where the bones.
If your bones are, so if you haven't got a hand, so it just like there's a, you severed at the wrist and you've got a ham hand, so that made me quite anxious. So then I thought, well then the is it armpit?
Yeah,
armpit. Your stuff comes out of your armpit. Yeah. But then I thought, then there's glands there. There's all kinds of other stuff.
Yeah, think about that. How does that connect? And what? How deep is the reservoir of sun cream?
And could you like alter your diet? that would then produce either a stronger or a weaker sun cream.
You know, I've always said that it will stay the same factor all the way through, so you can't.
Yeah, so you can't
so you choose whatever the factor is.
Because presumably you're secreting this.
Yeah,
in
well,
some
you know,
way, organically.
You have a valve that means you can control it. I don't want you walking around with
just
sun cream. I wouldn't do that to you.
Well, I don't. The thing is, I don't. I'm lucky in the sense that if I go in the sun, I don't get terribly burnt. In the sense that my skin goes quite brown, and I don't get. Like my wife is very Irish, and if there's some reflected light off a distant window that comes through and touches her skin, she gets freckles and depressed.
You could put the sun cream from your armpit on her.
I could just squirt it on her all the time. In fact, I suppose that might be a bonding experience. Lift your arm up, doll. I need a bit of a squirt. Her voice isn't quite that deep. It's close. Depends on her mood. I'll go for the sun cream.
Well, I think you've made me feel slightly sick about the ham hand.
Yeah.
I'm never going to ask that question again. I wasn't really going to ask it anyway, but I will never ask it again. And you do a lot of writing. I mean, we'll get onto your books, but you have written. You've written a screenplay for the film of The Christmas Carol.
Long time ago,
with, like, Kate Winslet and lots of people.
I didn't write it with her, but she was in it. Yeah. But I didn't meet her or any of that sort of thing.
I love The Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of adaptations.
There's been lots of adaptations.
I did not see your one.
You didn't, to be perfectly frank, you haven't led a culturally bereft life by not seeing it.
I should.
It wasn't terrible. It was an animated Christmas Carol, and it had a couple of things that were not my idea, like a mouse that was a character in it that was slightly annoying.
Yeah, that's not
good. But the good bit is the three. Oh no, that's a completely different job. I did do a voice, I was one of the voices in it, but I can't remember what I did.
I did look at it on IMDb.
I'll tell you what I did, because it was the same company. I did Prince Cinders, which is the Cinderella story reversed.
Switched around.
Which was a children's
book. That's
what
we need.
Yeah, it was children's
Men
book.
Men being empowered, that's what we want.
Yeah. So Prince Cinders is Cinders, a little boy, or a young man, and he meets the beautiful
that's
princess.
A bit better. He's a young boy who meets a prince who just fucks him at midnight. There he goes, don't tell anyone. I'm going to turn you back into a...
Yeah, it was a children's show with an enormous amount of bumming in it. Yeah.
I'm going to look out The Christmas Carol. That sounds to me, The Christmas Carol movie, sounds like a good answer for Pointless if we find out who the people are in there. And we can't talk about it too much because it hasn't been on yet. But we took each other on at Pointless.
We did, I know, but it was weird. Because you were quite keen.
I wasn't sure
what I was doing.
Well, I was the only one who knew what the game was out of everyone doing
it. Yeah, you were,
And I really liked the programme.
It grew on me enormously. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
I bet it fucking did. Sorry,
I don't know when it's on. Do you know when it's on?
No, I think it's on over Easter.
It's soon,
it's a shame.
It?
Shame we can't. Yeah. Shame we can't talk about it.
We can't talk about any of it. No.
You were on with Dom Jolly, who I don't really like anyway. But the partner I was with made quite a bad mistake in the first round, which was embarrassing for her. But Dom Jolly just kept on going on about it, ungallant of him.
Yeah.
But that's all I'm going to tell you about it. There's no way anyone can work out what happened from that.
You'll just have to watch.
I can't wait to talk about it. I will wait.
I think we should.
I will wait. But you also write. I mean, you've been writing books for a long time. I like this title as a book. This is maybe your first book, The Reconstructed Heart. How to spot the difference between a normal man and one who does the housework and is great in bed and doesn't get all iffy when you mention words like love and commitment.
Yeah.
Which is pretty impressive as a title.
It's a good title, isn't it? And you imagine that just flew off the shelves.
Yeah. But what I quite like about it is it's sort of saying, I, Robert Llewellyn, am good in bed. And don't get... that's what you're really saying there.
No.
So what was it? Was it...
Well, it was from a show. It was a kind of a comedy lecture with comedy slides.
Right.
One of them was a classic, which was the amount of red wine a woman has to drink before she believes all men are bastards.
Right.
And it had gradually decreased from 1960 till it was just like a sip in the year 2000. So, you know, it had some good visual gags. Someone said, write a book about it, so I kind of tried to do
Sounds
that.
Sounds good. I would. Is it still... Can you get it on Kindle? Or
you can get it in charity shops if you're prepared to look long enough. No, I wouldn't think it's... it was a long time ago. Okay. A long time out of print. I don't know when it came out. In the early 90s.
I think it was.
It's weird how I've got two children and I can only do things in terms of when they were born. So that was before they were born. So it must be, and my son's 20, so it's got to be more than 20 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. And so, but now you're writing sci-fi books.
Yeah.
They've been doing that.
Which has been great fun. Yeah. The last, 3 years. So I've got
so
two of
trilogy.
Them here. I just brought them
just in case
you mentioned them. Just so you
Let's
can
see them.
So that's the first two books in a trilogy. I'm quite excited about that because I want it to be thicker. So I'm writing the third one at the moment. So the science fiction is quite hard to talk about them because they're not full of shagging and bumming. But there is some shagging in the first one, but it's very, very delicate and, yeah. and gentle and humane.
I'm not so interested in that. So,
so yeah, let's
if it's
not
with human
that.
Beings, I'm not that interested. So it's called News. The first one's
the first one's called News from Gardenia.
Yeah.
And that's set 200 years in the future where it isn't shit. I mean, that's the basic gist right. of it. So it, I think I saw one too many dystopian science fiction
yes.
films
yeah.
where there's one man with a gun and he's going to save his daughter and she's on the... And he's got to blow away loads of zombies or the yeah. fucking oil's run out and everyone's killing each other. All those... There's plenty of them. And they're very early on, when I started writing, I was like, God, I know why people write those, because they're really easy to fucking write. Everything's gone to shit and there's one guy with a gun.
Yeah.
And so to write a story that was about really following the historical progression of the human yeah. species and to sort of project that forward is you know, it's better now than it was in 1105 or 2000 years BC when life was fucking brutal, short, nasty, and you died very young.
Yeah.
We live longer, we're much less likely to die of violent death, all those things. You know, we've got yeah. all those things. And so I just pushed it. So I took that and went with that. So there's a great guy called Steven Pinker who does a wonderful talk about... Yeah. He's written a great book called The Better Angels of Our Nature, which is about how we're told it's all worse. And like my gran would say, well, in the old days, you keep our doors open, it didn't matter what happened, you know. And actually, the amounts of rapes, burglaries and murders during the Blitz in London were fucking horrendous. But it's not reported, obviously, because it would have lowered morale. But there was an enormous amount of crime because of the blackout and people, you know. Yeah. So we always think it was all marvellous back then, everybody stuck together, no.
Also, there were Nazis and
and there were some Nazis and bombs in concentration camps.
What I always love about that, it was always much better in yeah. our time when, yeah. when there was genocide going on.
So it's just that you know, the statistics of it are yeah. that, you know, if you were, you and I would not be the ages we are no, a thousand no. years ago, we'd have both been killed in a war or bludgeoned or whatever. And so to then push that forward to what the world could be like in 200 years if we didn't shit it up.
Yes.
And how society could change. And so that really made me have to think about those things and read a lot about that stuff. And so the first book is... a kind of benign, anarchic country, this country, with no cities, with everyone has to grow food, which is why it's called Gardenia. That's the name that we've given this country. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't grow food, you haven't got anything to eat. Because there's no, you know, all those things have changed. But it's technologically highly developed. There is high technology stuff being used.
Sure.
We don't burn, and they don't burn anything. So that was the baseline I gave myself. No one can burn anything to make anything else.
Right.
Which, if you think, is what we do a lot at the moment.
Yeah.
And the big downside of burning shit is you can't burn it again, and it has other problems. So it's a sort of thought. It's a part thought experiment, part adventure story of a slightly nerdy and emotionally blocked person. Which I've been told by three or four people who've read the book and know me well, it's just an autobiography, it's just you. As opposed to the title of that book about the man being good in bed. He's shit in bed and he can't communicate with women. which is a much more accurate appraisal. And then the second book is a world where... I then thought about the way society is structured and the way things operate now and how we do... make things and generate energy and organise our societies. And I went, well, let's just flip it right over so that women are in control 100% and men do nice stuff, take the kids to school, get coffee, wear nice hats. which is what... So the second book, News from the Squares, that one, is a world entirely run by women. The entire world is run and controlled by women who have... You know, they've got a tough job. They've got to run the sewage system, the electricity network, transportation... Yeah. The education system, the city planning, how you feed people, it's quite complicated. They're a bit stressed, a bit grey, quite attractive, but, you know, under a lot of pressure. And the men are lovely. And they wear nice clothes and they do gardening. They're not lazy. They're cooking and cleaning and looking after the kids. And they have a lot of coffee in coffee shops and chat. And as I was writing, I went, and the amount of men I've heard from, I go, can I just fucking go there? They do shopping for clothes and shit.
Yeah, it sounds nice. It is quite interesting because I think that's what is interesting about science fiction is nearly always negative about, even like H.G. Wells... They all create a dystopia or a terrible situation, or, you know, it's the Frankenstein thing, I suppose, is the beginning of it, that the medical experiment goes wrong, whereas in reality science, as you are pointing out, makes the world better in most ways.
Yeah, in most ways. And I mean, I think there are, one of the things that where the title comes from is a book called News from Nowhere by a guy called William Morris, who I always thought was the bloke who did the wallpaper, but he was a bit of a sort of social revolutionary, and he wrote News from Nowhere, which was a wonderful short book about an absolutely exquisite, perfect, utopian society set in 1980. Right. So he wrote it in 1890, and then you think, that's one of the reasons I went 200 years.
Yeah.
100 years isn't enough.
It's not enough to do.
200 years, because 1980, from my memory, wasn't a beautiful, exquisite, utopian, delightful wonder world. And so there's, I read it when I was very young, and I reread it when I started to work on this, and it was a very different experience reading it again, but it's not got gags or shagging, and everyone smokes, which is quite weird. Everyone smokes pipes,
right?
They're all smoking pipes, and they all sit around and philosophize while they're smoking pipes, and I couldn't do that because that's burning shit.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
so true. No smoking.
Well, we're talking of burning shit. There was that time you burnt some shit. No, you're a big fan, obviously, of the electric car, which I suppose does not burn petrol. There's something must burn to make the electric car work.
Not necessarily. Okay. We could go into it and I could be very dull. but yes, I in fact came... I was driven here in one this evening, which is rather expensive, from an electric car taxi company.
Right.
So it's very nice, with a lovely Lithuanian driver.
Yeah.
Very bright guy.
He hadn't come all the way from Lithuania to give you the lift.
All on one charge.
So do you think electric cars are going to... I just bought a car last year, and I was sort of thinking, I should go more, green, but then I didn't.
Couldn't bother. No, it's fine.
Because it's still like, it is difficult to, get a really good commercial electric car. Is it, or is it, Robert?
No, it isn't difficult. I mean, I don't know what you mean, but it isn't difficult.
Isn't difficult to, you sort of think, how can I charge them, and how far will they go, and, will I look cool driving around in them, which I'm not really worried about. I've got a VW Golf, so it's all right.
I've had many of them. And in fact, in a couple of weeks' time, I'm going to go and drive the Golf GTE, which I'm very excited about, which is an electric Golf GTI.
Yeah.
Except it's faster than the Golf GTI. I suppose the thing is, I don't want to talk about electric cars too much because I do bore people shitless about it. But
I'll ask a rude question afterwards that will change the tone.
Yeah.
I'll start looking now.
Yeah. While I drone on for the next 2.5 hours. The only thing I want to say about them is that they're fuel agnostic.
Okay.
How's that then? So
do say a bit more because I don't understand what that means.
So I like this. It was a proper scientist told me that.
Yeah. Okay.
Fuel agnostic, which means that electricity comes from lots of different places.
Yeah.
And an electric car doesn't give a toss which sort of electricity. So you could literally burn coal and boil a kettle and make that and have a tube going and make it drive a turbine, and it's really fucking inefficient, massive amounts of coal, and there's loads of fucking CO2, and it turns a turbine and it charges the car over 3 weeks, and then you're driving the dirtiest fucking car in the universe because of the amount of shit that you burn. Or you could charge it from solar panels, which I do at home, or from a hydroelectric, or from geothermal, or from wind, or from nuclear.
Like in Back to the Future.
Like in Back to the Future.
It might go back in time.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. Whereas with a petrol or diesel car, you literally only buy fuel from King Faisal in Saudi Arabia, who's not, let's face it, one of the biggest wishy-washy, wet liberal tossers on the planet.
I guess when you look at it like that, it is an interesting... It's the same way as people argue that, getting cocaine from South America actually doing lots of harm in that area, and lots of liberal people will take lots of cocaine. But, when you think about where petrol and diesel comes from...
Yeah, it's a bit of a problem.
If there wasn't that call for it, then things would be quite different. I don't know if they'd be better or worse.
No, I don't know. It would be different. And I think it's a disruptive technology in the same way as cell phones, mobile phones, the internet.
Yeah.
It's definitely a disruptive. It disrupts the what we're used to. It's normal to go in a car and fill it up in a petrol station. 99% of people, including me, go to a petrol station, you pick up the thing, you go, that's where petrol comes from, that thing.
Yeah.
And you put it in the tank, and then you fucking cost a fortune, fuck. And then you buy a bottle of water, which is more per litre than petrol. And you moan, but you don't moan about that. And then you drive, and that's, you know, that's normal. But, I mean, even today, in the Daily Telegraph, well-known left-wing rag, there is a report about the levels of airborne pollution, nothing to do with CO2, climate change or anything, airborne pollution at Buckingham Palace. It's one of the worst places in Europe.
Right.
It's so high. It's because we've got so many diesel taxis and buses.
Yeah.
And that's changing, and it will change, and it will get better. But, you know, there are a lot of aspects of why we might consider using an electric car that aren't anything to do with looking good when you get out of it. Because if you think of it, the people who promote the looking good when you get out of a car notion are three of the biggest tossers that British television has ever produced. And I do not want to look like them. I don't give a fuck what I look like when I get out of a car, and I don't give a fuck what the car looks like. It can look like a turd. Well, I quite like a turd car, actually. An electric turd car would be quite good.
That would be quite nice. Yeah. It's just a question of whether it can get you to the places you need to go. You know, I drive around the country a lot. And then
I
think,
well, I mean, it would be a challenge, but it's less of a challenge now than... very quick one. 3 years ago, Brian Milligan, BBC journalist, drove from London to Edinburgh in January in a Mini-E. An electric Mini. It took him 4 days.
Right.
And he had to stop and plug it into a 13-amp thing like you plug your kettle into. It took 10 hours to charge it. He couldn't put the heater on, it was because it used too much power, and he couldn't get to the next place. It was a nightmare, and it was a huge amount of press all over the world. Fox News in America loved it. It was on the BBC. And then 3 weeks ago in January, I drove from London to Edinburgh in a Nissan Leaf in 13 hours. Really fucking boring, better to get the train. But we did it easily because you can charge them at every single motorway services all the way between here and Edinburgh. There's a charger that will charge it in 20 minutes.
Right.
And so we just did it.
Yeah, that would be good.
But with the heater on.
With the heater on. That's very good. Yeah. And so you use these cars as you do your podcast, or you used to do your podcast Carpool. Are there going to be more car, which I've done a couple of times?
You have.
And very enjoyable chat, so we've chatted before. Are you doing more Carpools?
I hopefully am. I mean, I'm right in the middle of some sort of... I think I definitely am.
Yeah.
I think I can say that, but it's the same format. So, but it looks like I'll be doing them in a different car each time. So each person it will be a different car.
Yeah.
So it'll be slightly more car-oriented. But though, as soon as, you know, like when you get the car, we never talked about the car, and I don't want to talk about the car, so we'll just drive and talk.
And how do you feel about the Jerry Seinfeld similar idea, comedians in cars with coffee?
It is intriguing, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly the same in terms of production values, it's considerably higher.
And the guests are a bit better.
And the guests are
I wasn't asked to
massively
be on that one.
Better than anyone I ever had. No, but I mean, I don't think it's... it's not an original idea to put cameras in cars.
No.
I mean, it's been done before, and I think it's fine. I mean, I'm planning to do, hopefully, with someone, I don't know who yet, just absolutely steal it. So I'm just going to do a show called Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, and I'll do it in some ridiculous car and talk about the car and then go and get coffee and film it in the same way and have tracks and a crew with lights and boom, you know, because it's got to be a big crew that does that.
Yeah.
But it's been hugely successful. It's very popular, and I bet he's pissed off the amount of tweets he's had. You stole that idea from Bobby Lou! He's going, who the fuck is this Bobby Lou?
Because it's just you in the car. Right? It's just you and you sat at the cameras.
Yes, it's just me and cameras, But so there's not like a whole like camera rig on a truck like he has going alongside his Lamborghini.
But what I quite look when you look at it, there's a you've got a lot of very big names.
Yeah,
but you've also had quite. You had Alice Roberts, who is the she's a sort of scientist. Basically, she does lots of different science things. So I saw her do a brilliant lecture about embryology the other day. I think her new book was about that. But did you choose all the people you have?
Yes.
So you're kind of choosing quite it's quite an eclectic mixture.
It was. I mean, there was some. It would just happen. Just things like it wasn't a particularly popular episode, but I bought these sausages called Black Farmer sausages because they're gluten free. My wife is a celiac, and she could have sausages. And I looked at that and I went, God, that's weird. What it says, Black Farmer, and then you realise that it's a West Indian guy that has a farm in Wiltshire and grows pigs and makes sausages. And he's celiac, so they're gluten free sausages.
Right.
So then I kind of see their PR thing, and I get in touch. And suddenly I've got the Black Farmer in my car, who is standing as a Conservative MP at the last election.
Did you talk about Birds of a Feather?
Didn't talk about Birds of a Feather. But we got on really well, and he told me that really I should vote Conservative, for the, you know, in the most, the nicest possible way. And I said, I don't think I will, but you're lovely. And he was exquisitely dressed, and he has this lovely farm, and he's so I love doing that. That kind of completely weird, you know. Basically, I did research in a supermarket.
Right. Yes,
that's where I found him.
But it's mainly, again, it's an internet-based thing, which we had in the last two podcasts where people kind of doing pioneering on the internet. So. Is the new series going to be on
the internet? Oh, yes, just on the internet. Yeah, I mean, that's really at home. I mean, so that got picked up by Dave. Again, I did a series on Dave, which was fine, and it was good, and I was, you know, but it wasn't what I wanted. The whole idea of that always was that it was an internet thing, and also that you weren't restricted by length of time.
Yeah.
That you could do, some of them aren't that long, you know, 15, 20 minutes, some are three quarters of an hour. It depends on what happened, you know.
Yes. Yeah, so that's what I like about this show is the fact we can talk for a long time about things that aren't interesting the audience at all.
We can drone
on. Or anyone at home, but it still goes out. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Yeah.
Who's important, Robert, you or me? It is us. If your penis could travel through time, who would you have? So you can have sex with one person before your penis evaporates.
I've got a little bit of a question here. Yeah. Which way... Well, that's in terms of time.
It can go forwards, but then,
quite like,
you know,
to go
who do you want to fuck? I want to fuck. All I can think of is your own relations in the future, which would be a terrible. Who do you know? Who are you gonna fuck in the future?
But I would think, because there's that song by either Busted or McFly, which I'm very proud to say I haven't got a clue. Which they're boys with sideways hair, but and they're now the same, aren't they? I've understood that. Which is he went to the year 3000 and he came home or whatever. Anyway, it's all the same, but they live underwater.
Okay.
And I met your great 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 granddaughter. She's looking fine. And I thought, God, you know, I'll think of someone like I have a very handsome male friend who's got a who's got a daughter who is the same age as my children. Wrong. Yes. But like her, she's stunning.
I don't think this is gonna get. I do not think this is going to get any better.
But not
if
her.
I can just.
Not
it's
her.
Like I'm not
There's
a paedophile,
no blood.
But if I could travel,
there's no blood relation. But I want to go like five generations in the future,
and have sex with
with a grown woman, with a grown woman who is the great 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 granddaughter of this 20-year-old woman
so
I know.
Risk,
now.
Robert.
Is there a risk in that?
Well, because the genetic material could get. Sadly, you know,
but
one of my fans could have sex with.
Yeah, but she's not. She's no blood relative of mine. So I'm not saying.
No, it's not that. Like, it's just you. At five generations' time, anything could happen.
God, I suppose in that time, maybe like her daughter, the woman, the girl I know now, her daughter could have married, say, my grandson.
Yeah.
Fuck. Or, you know.
And then, exactly.
Oh. Or you know, even.
I mean, that's the least of your worries, to be honest. This. The psychological thing this is open.
But I'm talking.
I want to go into the future and have sex with someone who I'm just having a punt on might be attractive. It's only your penis that's going, so that's
exactly.
fine. You can't see him anyway. You don't look at the mantelpiece, do you, when you're poking a woman in the year 3000?
The other thing that made me anxious was how thick was the matter, the dark matter of the where the wormhole is. Because if it's like really thick.
Yeah.
It wouldn't reach, you know. That would be so depressing. You've got this fantastic opportunity to have sex with your best friend's daughter's great 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 granddaughter,
and it might be a grandson though. That's the problem. There's no guarantee of the gender. If you go, I'm five generations, whatever the child is, the grown child is. This is, I mean, the thing is, there's not a court in the land that can touch you for this.
No,
or not until you're well long dead. That's
actually, if it was a... just now I've had a bad thought that I don't know if I
want to... Now you've had a bad thought.
It's not bad. It's not bad. It was just sort of inappropriate.
Well, you know, I would edit it out, but because of pointless, I'm going to leave that in.
Yeah.
So, whatever it is that happens...
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
No. Hmm. No, sorry.
Have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
I have seen some fucking big feet, but not an actual Bigfoot, no. Size 19.
Imagine when... Really?
Yeah, size 19 feet. I used to make shoes, so I made a pair of shoes for a man who had size 19 feet.
Who did you make shoes for and why?
Oh, all sorts of people. But, I mean, he stays in the memory.
Who were you working for selling...
I used to work for... they're still there. James Taylors, who are shoemakers just off Marylebone High Street.
Oh, yeah.
And John Lobbs, who are in St. James
Street. So, proper smart shoes.
John Lobbs is where James Bond had his... Right. You know, in the stories, had his shoes made, and Charlie Chaplin saw his lasts. He had quite small feet.
Right. You saw his lasts.
Yeah, so the lasts is the wooden mould that the shoe's made on. Yeah. So
They kept them all there.
Just in case. You never know, he might come back.
You never know. Time travel.
Mr. Chaplin's come back, sir.
Funnily enough, I've just read a book about that's coming out, that's been out in Germany, about Hitler just waking up and being alive again in the present day.
Wow.
After he's committed suicide and he's suddenly alive again. So, you know, you never know. If he can do it, Chaplin can do it. Anyone with that moustache can do it. And so are you an expert? Is that a skill you've properly acquired, or can anyone go and make shoes?
No, I did an apprenticeship and I was a shoemaker, yeah. I didn't know this at all.
Is this a known fact about you?
I think it's not something I've kept deep.
Didn't see it on Wikipedia.
Yeah. Hey, it's not on Wikipedia. I did do it. So, I mean, I did it, but when the Joeys started, I had quite different hands.
Right.
Because a shoemaker's hands... you can crush metal with them. They're very strong, so you're working with them all day. And black fingertips, because the metal of the tools you use and wet leather tends to stain your fingers. So I was always very ashamed of my fingertips. I was probably performing like that, which probably people thought is very dangerous. Yes. Lunatic young man with enormous, thick, dark hair. But So
if you need new shoes now, do you just make your own shoes?
No, I would love to. It's very slow and painful. I know. I've still got all the tools, but it would take me a long time to do it, I think.
Make your own shoes, man. What are you thinking?
I mean, I have made my own. I've still got shoes I made, but not this like 30 years ago, so I haven't done it for a long time.
I'd be making my own shoes every day. I'd have a new pair of shoes every day. I'd just throw them away. I'd make them, put them on, go,
I mean, it is an experience that's hard to communicate if you've never had it. But if you have a pair of shoes made for you, it's weird. I mean, or you make your own or whatever, but when you put them on... It's like you've put on a brand new pair of shoes that fit.
Yes.
Which normally, brand new shoes don't. And so they're very...
They don't. These ones. Because I think I've got like some posh shoes. These are really fucked now. But these were quite expensive and posh.
Yeah.
But they really hurt for ages. They really rub for ages until they got the right. And also I just kept slipping up because they don't have any soles on them. What are you meant to do about that? That's stupid.
Well, I know. It is a problem. But they make a really good sound. Yes. If you've got really good ones when you're walking... On London pavements, a little bit of grit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, no, they're lethal. I've fallen over so many times.
And also, when you stand on chewing gum, it really sticks to it.
It's horrible.
Just buy your shoes from Clarks. Yeah. That is my advice. And then you can have a go on one of those machines. So you put your foot in.
I'd love that. See, I think there is still a side of me that wants to develop a kind of 3D printed shoe thing. It's actually, in fact, I describe it in News from the Squares, chapter 15, I think.
Well, that would definitely.
Where you just put your foot in a thing and you just get a shoe and it's there and you go, fuck. And it fits absolutely exquisitely immediately.
Also, when I went, I've been skiing this year, which is the first time. Oh. And that was the worst thing about it, was just the boots hurt so badly.
I refuse to do it. I just think if anything slips under my feet, I want to get away from that area. I don't want to stay there. It doesn't appeal.
I'm the same, but my wife made me, and that's what happens when you get married. I didn't realise you have to do stuff for the other person.
I know.
Never get married. That is my advice.
But my wife made.
I don't
my
mean,
wife
it's
goes
not going to happen for you, but never get married, Jesus. Apart from to that lady. How are you two getting on? Is it going all right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, he's a nice young lad, isn't he? For you, he's a younger man.
Isn't that nice?
15 years old, he is. Sorry if you're also 15. It is dark down there. I was going to ask you about the time you got Tabasco on your penis, but that was Ollie Mann. Oh, I forgot to ask. I forgot to ask him about that. My sound guy, George, wants to talk, and I hope you are in this, because I didn't see this in any of my research. He loves Hollywood Science.
Oh, yeah.
Have people seen this show?
Anybody saw Hollywood Science?
Yeah, some people have seen it.
Oh, good, some people saw it.
So you can recreate... There was one where you had to piss on a shirt.
Yes, piss on a shirt, yeah.
And what Hollywood film is that in?
Somebody else. It's Jackie Chan. It was the first movie I ever saw Jackie Chan in. Right. So it's Jackie Chan and Owen Wilson. Shanghai Noon.
Shanghai Noon.
So Jackie Chan.
Audience Wikipedia.
They're in a prison. Yeah. They're in a Western jail. Yeah. You know, a cowboy jail. And Jackie Chan says, Ben Barr, wet shirt, wet cloth, very strong. Something like that. He does his lines. And Owen Wilson goes, oh, I just love his voice. I can't do it. Well, all right, let's get the shirt wet. And then Jackie Chan turns around, pisses on the shirt, wraps it round the bars, twists it with a bit of wood, and it bends the bars and they can escape. And, wow. And the line, Owen Wilson's line is, I thought you said wet shirt, not piss shirt. Because anyway, so if you wet linen or cotton, it strengthens it enormously. It's a
and would you be
fact.
Out and did you try and then
we did
escape
it we then
prison?
Recreated it and we bent hugely thick rebars, reinforced steel bars they used to build in buildings.
That's quite and dangerous only because now loads of criminals are going to be able to escape if they've seen this programme.
Not that I've spent a lot of time in prisons, but when the few times I've visited mates, they don't have that sort of cage thing. They have a massive fucking steel door. Yeah, so it would be harder to bend that with a shirt.
Yeah. Well, so it was just it was looking at the science behind the things
and whether it would be plausible. So the classic was it was a guy called Jonathan Hare that was the proper scientist I did it with, and it was Bruce Willis jumping off the Nakatomi Tower in the first
with this,
was that the second
the first, no,
first one.
One.
With the thing tied round his waist, and we worked out from watching the film very carefully how far he dropped, and it was about 120 metres, and then it goes ching and it goes tight, and he goes like that. But what would actually happen is you'd have Bruce and Willis down at the bottom of the tower because you'd be falling at terminal velocity, and it would just literally snap the human body in half if it didn't have any elasticity in it.
So you didn't try that one.
We didn't try that. We tried that one with an action man out of the bedroom window of the house we were filming in. We did some really good stuff. Yeah. It was great fun to do.
That sounds like a great idea.
We made soap like they did in Fight Club, but we didn't use human fat. We weren't allowed. I wanted to, and we could have. We were getting in touch with liposuction clinics to see if we could get
them with morgues.
Yeah. No, not but they weren't, we weren't allowed to do that. Right. But we used pig fat, which is incredibly worryingly similar.
Yes.
Pig fat and human fat. And we made soap, and I had a bloody shower with it, which is a bit embarrassing. Drank my own piss.
And they wouldn't let me cheat.
That was from Waterworld. Was it Waterworld? Kevin Costner. What was it called? Waterworld. And you see him piss in a jar and he puts it through a reverse osmosis machine, pumps it through, and then he drinks it. And they made me do that, so we had a. And it was still warm. It was really. Because we did it literally there on in a lab.
Yeah.
Pump it through.
So it got all the stuff out.
It was absolutely water. I mean, I didn't think it wasn't water, but it was the fact that it was still slightly warm. And they made. And I said, can't we just put Evian in it and, we'll pretend. They wouldn't. They were all the people behind it, the producers and directors, were all scientists and. They were sticklers for reality.
Yeah,
but it was good fun to do. And I would love to have done more, but it was a boring story why we didn't do more. But
no, that sounds like if this takes off, and we make loads of money from these
badges,
let's
do another series of Hollywood Signs.
If I sell,
you could say if you sold all those, we could do a whole series of Hollywood Signs.
If everyone who listens to this pays £1. Then we can make Hollywood Science.
Excellent.
Well, it'll have to be more than that because I'm going to make some of my own stuff first if that happens. But then we'll get on to that. And I wanted to talk. You had a car crash in your car.
I did.
Yeah, in 2009 in one of your electric cars.
A hybrid, to be technically specific.
Okay.
And I was very lucky, really, that I'm not dead, I think, probably. The weird thing about it is I have absolutely no memory of it at all.
It's not much good for this podcast.
No, it's not really anything I can say. The good thing was...
Because you got knocked out, you were actually...
I was unconscious for, I think, about 20 minutes.
Wow.
I don't know. And someone tweeted that I was dead, which was a bit alarming when I looked at Twitter sort of 2 days later, and there was sort of RIP and all that stuff.
Oh, my God. So what, because they'd been there at
the
scene?
I think they'd been there. It was at quite a busy junction, and there was quite a lot of people passing. So someone, I don't know, I have no idea how that happened, but it was sort of, I don't know. Because obviously if you were unconscious in a car that was literally torn in half, I mean, it was in two pieces.
Was it?
Yeah, so it wasn't.
But it was the other guy's fault.
The other guy's fault, and thankfully he was insured. He wasn't drunk. He admitted full liability. Yeah. It was in country roads because I live out in the sticks. Lethal.
Yeah.
Just stick to driving around London's most safer.
Well, you don't go fast enough in London to have a serious accident.
Yeah. So he went across a junction on a. I was on the main road, he was on a narrow lane at the side with a massive, fucking huge red stop sign, and he didn't even brake because there's no skid marks or anything. He just rammed straight into me.
But there were some skid marks.
So yeah, there's not really a lot I can say. What do they got? Curtain airbags, apparently, which are the ones that are at the side.
Yeah.
I didn't even know the car had them, but that's what saved my life. Yeah. So they must have gone off. I just came round in. Well, I felt I was in like. A 1900s sunny, it was in the middle of the summer, a sunny kind of drawing room with lovely white linen curtains. I was ever so happy. And apparently I'd been saying weird shit to a policeman who, it was very charming, and he said, right. And I sort of went, hello. And there was a policeman's head coming into this lovely sort of Victorian sitting room. It felt lovely. It was all peaceful. It was very quiet. It was the least alarming way you could come round from quite a serious road accident.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was very bloody.
And
lucky.
So after that, were you nervous about driving again, or were you just fine?
I think I was a bit for a while, but I mean, and I was a bit. There was Graham Linehan, the writer. I did a couple with him not long after, and there was a point when I braked very hard when we were probably 500 metres from a pedestrian crossing, and I saw someone crossing, but we really weren't near. So it's like, oh, really? That's fascinating. So the IT go, and he went, oh, what was that? And I went, someone crossing the road. Look, right down there. And so I was obviously a bit. Extra careful.
Yeah, it could change the interviews quite a lot if you're just screaming in the face of
Roger! Oh my god! No, but I did get over it.
Good.
Yeah.
So that I sometimes ask what's the closest you've come to death, but I'm guessing that's
I suppose that probably is. Yeah. I don't know. I can't think of any other it's not not in those terms.
No. Well, I'm glad.
A Glaswegian man
glad you survived.
Threatened me once, but
oh, really?
I can run quite fast. Well, I could then. I wouldn't be able to now, but yeah.
Let's see what else I've got for you in my little sleeve. I've got up my sleeve. What age were you breastfed until? Haven't asked that one for a while.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. I would guess 2, mm-hmm. knowing my mum. It wouldn't have been, I don't think it wasn't 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I saw, I was thinking about that question again, because Izzy Sooty was breastfed till she was about 4 or 5.
Right.
Weird. But I saw like a couple on the tube on the way here with a baby, and I said, oh, that baby's really big. And then I realised they'd kind of had a 3-year-old size child.
Right.
But it was still dressed in sort of baby clothes and had like a pacifier and everything.
Wow.
It's a bit weird, isn't it?
I don't know, yeah. What's children are odd.
Then I kind of wondered what the oldest anyone's had a pacifier in until, because I bet there are quite old. But then I thought I'd quite like to introduce that for adults.
Yeah.
I used to. Well, nice. I used to. On the tube sucking a little nipple, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I used to use my son, because my son had one, and I used to use it. It was great. I'd drive with it sometimes. I'd fight because they were everywhere. Well, we were always losing them, so we had them everywhere, everywhere we went. Because you always went, he'd start kicking off, and you'd just, it was the volume knob. And then I'd find her in the car, and I'd. It's quite nice.
We all like. That's the nipple in her mouth. There's no one who doesn't like that.
No.
Do you have an idea for Dragon's Den that we can push?
I've got one because of dogs and dog shit. So
right.
I'm really not keen on dog shit.
No,
strangely,
that
and we've got a little terrier dog we've had for years who's like sort of auto. She's like an eye dog. She just does stuff. I don't know what she does. She's there. She doesn't make any noise. She doesn't bite people. She doesn't do anything. She's very obedient. Walks right by my heel. Doesn't need to be told. I've walked right across London with her with no collar on, and she's just there like that. Really good little dog. And then last year, for some reason that really, really evades me, it's all about marriage, it's all about compromise, it's all about understanding and loving your partner, regardless, a fucking great stick insect of a lurcher dog suddenly arrived in my house and shat everywhere. And I don't know who, I just went, I looked at this creature that was like grinning at me like that. Just lakes of canine fecal matter.
Yeah.
And then I discovered that my daughter thought it was funny because he eats grapes. Well, grapes are not only bad for dogs, but they are like instant mega diarrhea, you know.
Yeah.
So we got over that. But then I thought, because when I walk with him, you've got to pick it up. Well, the little terrier, you know, it's like a peanut. sort of dry, and you know, it's just really neat. You pick that up, not a problem, and I'm not offended by it. I'm quite happy to do it. When he does it, it's like a fucking log. It's just gross, and it quite often of loose. And a loose nature. So
I just can't work out where this is going. That's what. Well, okay. I don't know if you're going to start selling dog manure or something.
So there was that. Well, then a couple of years ago, I did a program in Holland with about a guy who builds autonomous drones.
Right.
And I know that drones are trendy. Well, they've probably gone off a bit now, but they were trendy. And I suddenly thought, because there was that footage of the Amazon drone that was delivering to your door, and I went, I like that. That is good. So there's a drone that is like constantly just behind your dog. And it's got a camera on its arse. That's where it's locked in. And that's it. You set the target up. You've got to set it up first. Yeah. You use your phone. You set it up. You know, stay there. They're fucking brilliant, the drones are. They just, and it would hover just at that height. And it would go, and then it would have sensors. Yeah. It would have smell sensors. Heat sensors, because it would obviously be able to, it would need to pounce on it. So the dog does a shit, you're walking along, takes it into a sort of bag.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, it would be gross. It would have sort of fingers that would self clean, and then it would fly with you until it was near a bin, a suitable repository, and it would go. And I mean, that, I would pay serious proper
would
money.
Would you?
Yeah.
I think you'd need to probably pay about £50,000 for it to be a commercial.
They're not that. No, that's the problem with drones. They're cheap.
They're really cheap.
In the sense of...
I think the dog shit guidance one would be more expensive.
I don't know. The one we saw, it was an autonomous... This was autonomous.
Yeah.
You didn't have to steer it with a like radio control like planes, like in the olden days. and that one had a facial recognition cameras, like five built in.
Facial.
What did I call it?
Yeah, fecal. No, but not fecal.
Dog
anus.
We need fecal recognition. But that one could also... Clearly, you could mount a small, very small firearm underneath it.
Yeah.
So it flies up to you, it sees you. Oh, it is Richard Herring.
Yeah.
It would do three. Two to the chest, one to the head.
Yeah.
Tap, tap, tap.
Yeah.
And that's that, and then it goes off, and it can crash. It doesn't matter. It costs £20. They're dirt cheap.
It's a dangerous thing, though, because if, you know, you have autonomous flying pooper scoopers, you know, they could turn on the humankind.
They could. Or they could just go and release. That would be bad. Yeah. Okay. So you don't think it's going to work?
I don't think it is going to work. Your taxi's probably going to be here soon, so we haven't got too much longer. But we'll ask a bit more. So you were actually backstage. We were talking about sci-fi fans, and do you go to the conventions?
I mean, not a lot, but I have been, definitely. Yeah. And then certainly the big ones in America are an experience that one carries with oneself.
And are there a lot of US fans of the UK Red Dwarf?
Yeah. Surprising. I mean, not universally. I mean, it's in very specific cities where it's been shown. It gets shown on PBS in America.
Right.
So it was shown a lot. There's definitely very culty fan base. I mean, there was one period where they showed all of them, like in a big splurge, on all the PBS stations in America, and there was a time when there were far more numbers of people watching Red Dwarf in America than here. I mean, it was like sort of 22 million or something, which is like, you know, when we'd be... I think we touched 10 million here at our very peak. But, you know...
Well,
so
Operation U-Tree will be on to you about that.
Yeah.
When the time comes, but you've probably got 10 or 15 years before it gets to you.
Yeah.
especially if they do retrials for everyone. It's going to take a long time. But you did a US version of Red Dwarf. You were the only one of the actors who was in the
British
version.
Yeah.
And how did it go?
Not good, I think. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was great fun. And the people who were in it were great. They were very nice people. But it was a kind of weird experience. And I mean, I'm really glad I did it, but also I'm more glad that it didn't work.
Right.
Because then I wouldn't have had to stay, but I've had to choose, am I going to go and live in Los Angeles? And out of all the cities I've been in America, I think that's my least favourite. To actually have to live there would be not pleasant. So it wasn't something I desperately wanted to happen.
No. So, why didn't it work?
No, I mean, it really isn't to do with the show or anything. It was to do with the politics of the studio system and the TV industry in America, and it was unfathomably complicated.
Right.
I can't even remember all the ins and outs of it. But I was very grateful not to be at the blunt end of that. You know, I was just faffing about. And also, you get treated in a totally different way as a, if you're on the screen in America.
Yeah.
It is the equivalent of royalty here. You know, it's, you just get ridiculous, unnecessary privileges.
Right.
That you don't. I felt guilty about being sort of, you know, tossy, middle-class twat. You know, and all those things. So a huge ex-basketball player, I think he was 7'2", 7'2", told me that he showed me where my parking space was in the studio lot, and so he was doing that. That's where you park a car. If anyone else parks a car, you tell me, and I will personally come out and kick their fucking ass. I was like that, going, and I went, I haven't got a car. It didn't matter if anyone else parked in that space, even if I didn't have a car. You know? So it was just a weird world.
And you didn't want that. You didn't want that world.
No, it was bonkers. Because yeah. One time I walked, the first week we were doing it, I stayed in a hotel, I can't remember anywhere, Universal Studios, that's where we were shooting it. So I stayed in some hotel that was probably 3/4 of a mile away up a hill. And I went, I'll walk in, because we were in the studio all day, and it's sunny, and it was lovely. So I walked down the hill, I may as well have created a terrorist attack. They went fucking apeshit because I didn't get in the car that they sent. You know? Right. So then you realise, oh God, this is really weird, restrictive world that they're all used to. The American actors were used to it.
And also, you kind of, but you bought it. Once you're in it, you can't escape.
Oh, I would have had pectoral implants in within a week and been in 23 hours a day therapy.
Yeah.
And had my penis enlarged so hugely, instantly. Because you do get paid silly money as well. Yeah. I mean, but then it's all. It was taxed almost to invisibility for the beginning,
right,
until I managed to prove that I didn't live in California, and you get, I don't know, it was a really, it wasn't the glamour that it was meant to be.
No. It's interesting, I was reading Rupert Everett's second autobiography, and he did a pilot of a sitcom he'd come up with about a British ambassador.
Right.
But it was who was in it? I, Claudius, what's his name?
Derek Jacobi
was in it, but Derek Jacobi basically, you know, they really fucked around with it and ruined it and changed it. To be honest, his original idea didn't sound brilliant either, but they then made it even worse. But Derek Jacobi just said to him backstage as he was about to go on, no offence, but I really hope this doesn't get made.
I was a bit like that.
because on the one hand, it's like a life-changing amount of money, but on the other hand, you can't escape the contract.
No.
At all, you know, and so...
And it's 6 years, it's a 6-year contract, so it's a big commitment to make. I mean, I think people like Hugh Laurie, he did it right.
Yes.
And, I have enormous respect for that. And also, he was sort of... I've always thought he was the really good actor out of that generation.
Right,
he was the really extraordinary actor that you sort of think of as being, you know, he's just a sort of posh chap. Actually, I think when he acts, he's very, very good.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was a really interesting series that was massively popular in America. I mean, it's extraordinary what a star he gave and how much money he would have got for doing that. Then you realise
that... I reckon over £20,000.
Easily.
In total.
Could be... I'd go as far as 35,000 in total for 10 years' work.
But it's interesting how those moments can change your life. You know, your life can go one way or another way.
Yeah.
I can't see Red Dwarf working in the American system.
That's... I mean, it was, I don't know how, yeah, it's a very, it was a very, I could have brought my third book out, which is called The Man in the Rubber Mask, which tells the story of that in great detail, because it is quite a complicated story of what happened there. But the actual pilot itself wasn't that bad, and the actors in it are really, really good. They were very funny and really good. I mean, Jane Leaves played Holly, the computer, and she was then in
Frasier
for years as the sort of, I don't know quite what her accent was, because she's a posh girl from Surrey, but
it was odd. She did a sort of northern accent
that Americans would understand. that no northern person has ever spoken.
And then all of her family had to come over, who were all again English actors.
Yeah.
Who then had to do this ridiculous northern accent.
That's right.
Accent. It's the only bad thing. I love that sitcom. It's the only slightly weird thing about that sitcom. Anyway, look, we better,
we've gone on for hours.
We could go on all night. It's been very, 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 very enjoyable meeting you, and thank you for returning the favour and coming on my thing, because I've been on yours. And, will you please give a massive round of applause to Rob Llewellyn, ladies and gentlemen? Thank you. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Robert Llewellyn.
Music was by Pess. Thanks to Orange Mark of the British Comedy Guide, everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre, and Chris Evans, you know the one I mean by now, and all of his crew from Go Faster Stripe. It was produced by wonderful Ben Walker. It's a Fuzz Go Faster Stripe and Sky Potato production. It goes out on the internet. Hooray! We'll be back with more next week. If you enjoyed that, you might also enjoy Rich Herring's Meaning of Life, which is also an iTunes and British Comedy Guide podcast. And you can watch a video of it at vimeo.com/channel/RHMOL. That's all free. If you want a slightly longer version of that and the full interviews from that show, go to gofasterstripe.com/RHMOL and you can pay a small amount of money to see that. Or just donate some money and get a badge. You can do it per just one off or per month. That will help us make even more internet content, like a video version of As It Occurs to Me. You'd like to see that, wouldn't you? Well, you're going to have to pay a little bit because it's going to cost us a lot of money. So that's where your money will go. None of it will come to us. We'll just spend it on making more fantastic shows. Or come and see me on tour, richardherring.com/gigs, for We're All Going to Die dates, which are all selling pretty well. So book ahead if you want to come and see that. Thanks for listening. Or you can get T-shirts. Cotton cart, richardherring.com, cart.com, and some mugs. Why not do that as well? Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for fantastic downloads and books and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club and get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, RichardHerring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It'll make me feel sad.